Ba 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 ba. Hip and a lip. Ba 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 ba. From unknown parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the hip and this is the lip.
Hello, good evening, everybody. Hip and Lip Nation on this August evening. Good evening to you all. Yeah, Brad.
I am the hip. This is the Lip, a New York Islanders podcast. Although it is now August 3rd. How much Islanders can we talk about?
So it's an everything under the sun podcast. Whatever's out there, we'll yak about it.
Well, speak for yourself. I'm going to yak about a few things tonight. We'll start with the Yankees. Yankees-Mets are going on right now. The trades that were made. Yankees traded some players away, big names. Mets acquired a big player. We're going to then go into a topic that we really haven't covered much in depth at all, daily fantasy sports. Very significant news today. And the final few interesting tidbits that I think will tickle your fancy. So, Hip and the Lipper here. we're going to have a fun show tonight.
I will add that the lip is very, very ticklish. So I think as soon as you get into that, I'm going to be feeling that euphoric feeling that whenever the hip goes on one of his monologues. So cannot wait for that later.
And of course, we'll wrap it up with the hipster beer of the week. And it's going to be how hipster is it if you can't pronounce the name of the beer itself?
Oh, my God. That's as H as it gets. And I think our audience will agree, and I'm sure that they've been enjoying your recommendations over the last couple of weeks with your prior ones. I know I have.
If they have beer, that is.
So, who doesn't love beer? Everybody loves beer.
You can't find it. You can't pronounce it. What better does it get? So there's nothing to talk about in the Islanders in the last week. If you listen to the last show, we mocked the rumors that the Islanders are considering the possibility of discussing about the anticipation of possibly contemplating a move to another borough or otherwise, and yada, yada, yada.
I think they are in the contemplation phase still.
They still are. They're still discussing it. Okay, so look, since the last show, the trade deadline came in and a lot of deals went down. Let's get through what happened for our local teams. So the Yankees did trade two of their arguably best performers on the season to date. The closer, setup man to closer to setup man. Is that right? Andrew Miller. Now back to closer. It's to the Cleveland Indians. Carlos Beltran traded to the Texas Rangers, and can't forget to mention Ivan Nova traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates. So lay it down for us. What's the deal? What do you see, like, as far as where the Yankees stand now? Were you happy about these trades? Whatever else you feel like spewing.
Well, I mean, just in case I haven't explicitly stated, I don't know if I actually have. The Lip is a Yankee fan, and I do go back to the early 90s with those awful Stump Merrill Yankee teams. So just in case anybody is thinking, oh, yeah, what are you, typical, you know, that typical 30-year-old front-running Yankee fan that only became a fan when Jeter and Bernie and those guys came to the team and they won and blah, blah, blah. Nope, I go back to the awful Stump Merrill Yankees. And the reason I bring that up is because that's what immediately entered my mind as soon as these trades went down. We'll get to that in just a second, but we knew that Chapman was going to get traded. At least we thought it was a very good chance he would. Covered that last week. Now the question that we posed was, will the Yankees fully commit to trading off the rest of their free agents and potentially Andrew Miller? So Nova, Beltran, free agents, both gone. And Andrew Miller, who had a couple of years left on his deal and who has obviously a lot of value to the Yankees, and to now will have a lot of value to the Indians as they make their run towards the American League pennant, you know, their division.
Meanwhile, I just have to interject to say that the Indians are about to get, they're about to lose their third straight game to the Minnesota Twins. with all three starting pitchers allowing at least six, maybe eight runs.
Wow, bad karma. I mean, I did see that Salazar.
Salazar, Carlos Carrasco, Trevor Bauer, all allowing at least seven runs to the Indians. Anyway, continue to go on their run for a postseason berth.
Wow, how about that? I mean,
yes.
I guess maybe bad karma after making that trade for Miller. I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming he had nothing to do with those losses.
His arm is getting cold as we speak. Continue.
So anyway, so again, the question was, would the Yankees make these deals? You know, would they trade off, you know, Beltran? And again, they were trying to dump Nova, we know, but, you know, some of these other guys like Miller or, you know, Eovaldi or Pineda, some other guys that have been rumored, and essentially wave the white flag. And I got to say, I was very surprised when I saw the Andrew Miller trade go down, at least with the way the Yankees portrayed it. They were not going to move him unless they got blown out of the water by an offer. And I hope that this was the offer that absolutely blew them sky high, because when I saw that trade announced, I was just shocked, because I really was not expecting it. And now that they have made these deals, now that they have basically, you know, conceded the season, even though Brian Cashman is going to spin it that they're not conceding anything and that they replenished their bullpen, you know, with Adam Warren and with Tyler Clippard, and, you know, the Yankees are finished. They're not doing anything the rest of the season. So we can basically put that to bed now, even if the Yankee ownership and brass wants to, again, spin it that the Yankee fans...
They have to sell tickets. I mean,
right, I was going to say that they still should come out to the stadium because we're still in the middle of a playoff chase. Yeah, whatever. Thanks. Bye. So here are the questions that come to mind. First off, how did Brian Cashman propose this to the Steinbrenners? Because we know that the Steinbrenners had to approve this. So how did he propose this to them? Did he say, hey, we're not waving any white flags. We're not conceding this season or next season or the one after. We're still going to be the Yankees. We're still going to try and contend for a World Series. We just feel that these are the best moves for this team right now. Replenish the farm system, have assets, whatever. Or did he say, hey, look, this team stinks. This lineup is awful. Our starting pitching staff, other than Tanaka, is below average. We have old guys. We have banged up guys. We have guys that are on their absolute last legs, guys that just stink. So, hey, we have to make these moves, and we can evaluate the direction we want to take after the season. That we don't know. I'm sure Cashman couldn't say we're going to, you know, blow this up and tank like the Cubs did or like the Braves are doing now or the Astros. I can't imagine the Steinbrenner signing off on something like that.
I would be surprised if Cashman would be as forthcoming and admitting the latter, because if I'm the Steinbrenners, I'd be like, dude, so you just pleaded your case for us to fire you, basically. Because you put us in this position with all these signings as the general manager. So, see you later.
Well, yeah. Well,
us here. You have to pay the price. And see you later.
Well,
if you say that first, you're sucking, you know, you're sucking their asses. And and you're basically trying to save face by saying what you said before. I don't know. I think if I'm Brian Cashman, what do you say? You say this. Look, we are in this position for reasons X, Y, and Z, and I'm willing to put my job on the line to say that I feel that strongly about making these moves. And if they don't work out, then I'll say see you later. So I'll put my job on the line in order to let these moves go to go through.
Well, I think it's like also a unique relationship, though, because Cashman has been there for so long. He's been there. I mean, what is it now? It's like got to be like close to 25 years. He's been within the organization. They've always had this type of relationship where he can never have full autonomy as the general manager. He's always had to run everything through ownership. Now, look, I mean, it was easy for him because he had, you know, unlimited economic resources. You know, the economic, you know, environment of baseball allowed the Yankees just to throw money at everything and basically fix any problem that they had. Any guy that they gave a terrible contract to, they were able just to, you know, dump them and, you know, and eat their losses and then move on to the next guy. They can't do that anymore. Cashman in his interview with Francesa yesterday, you know, basically talked about how, you know, putting aside the fact that it, you know, the top players in baseball are not going to make it to free agency. At least most of them are. They are just they are handcuffed by the new limitations within the economic environment of the game. You know, internationally, the amateur draft, you know, the luxury tax. So it's just not the same environment that they were able to have all the success in going back to, going back 15 to 20 years or so. Now, on the other hand, the teams that won, it wasn't because they threw money at big free agents. It's because sound managing, drafting, scouting, you know, making the right trade at the right time, the savvy trade, you know, putting the pieces together that fit. But that's why those teams won. Once they started throwing money at Giambi and A-Rod and Sheffield and, you know, Carl Pavano and Jarrett Wright and Kei Igawa, I mean, down the line, that's what, and yes, they did win in 09, but you saw that they did not have nearly as much success as they did in the mid-90s and late 90s. So now you look at, now, you know, again, the question is, what direction is the team going to take? Is it quick fix? Let's see what we can, who we can bring in next year. Or do they allow the young kids that are ready to come up, you know, take their lumps in the big leagues, go through their growing pains, cut their teeth, you know, getting major league experience, and basically watch the team lose because of it?
They just called up the catcher, right?
Yep, Gary Sanchez.
Yep.
Started, I believe.
So they're not, what they're doing, it seems indicative. Ignore what they say. Look, they have to say what they say to make everything sound like everything is fine and not to freak out, right? I don't know how much stock I put into what is said on a radio show when they're asked about the state of the team. But what decisions are being made actually about the club? And so calling a guy up like that now instead of waiting till September, when rosters expand, clearly show a signal where they want to get some of these younger guys exposure now. Half watching the game yesterday, they showed a guy warming up in the bullpen. I never heard of him.
Oh, they brought in like three guys, and I was there yesterday, and you know, just to throw that in, and the Yankee Met rivalry is completely. I mean, it's lost all of its luster. The Yankee Met games, it maintained a little bit of it for years, just because it seemed like there was always extra excitement, even when the teams were, if the Mets were not good and the Yankees were. I guess now, if you want to say the Mets are good and the Yankees aren't, and I got to say, the rivalry is definitely not what it was, or at least the games, like, they don't have the same enthusiasm or excitement that just, you know, naturally generated from those two teams being on the same field, even like the last like 5 to 10 years or so.
Which is a shame, considering the Mets were just in the World Series last year. It's not like these teams are, you know, in the bottom of the respective leagues. I mean, they're playing 500 baseball. It's not like they're that bad, but I don't know why. Is it losing its novelty because this is it's been a recurring series, Subway Series, every year since they reintroduced interleague play, and so at first it was a big novelty, and it's just kind of waned after a while.
Or is it because
the Yankees, look, Jeter's gone. Who is the face of the Yankees now? Who's the face of the Yankees?
They're faceless, unless you want to say that Didi Gregorius is the or Starlin Castro, or maybe
I think that's part of the issue.
Alex Rodriguez, who's still got a standing rousing boo from the Met fans yesterday when he pinch hit.
The captain's gone. It's left a big void as far as the personality on the team, and maybe that's really. That the passion behind the fan base has gone with it too, until it gets this a new core of players to root for.
And so I think that's a
transition that the Yankees need to happen. So the problem is it's hard to generate that kind of nucleus through free agents. Like, you just don't know, is bringing some guy in, you know, who's been around the league, is that going to suddenly add a leadership role that fans can get behind? Maybe. I don't know who that is, what position, but I think that's part of the issue. The Mets, the excitement behind the Mets was their pitching, and that's Wayne. Steven Matz, 6 runs tonight, Syndergaard has not been the same.
The Mets are in trouble right now. They just do not look good. The makeup of the team does not look good.
You got excited at the beginning of the year watching the Mets because you knew that, you know, every four out of five starts were coming from high quality pitchers, and that they would just blow guys away, and you would love to see dominant pitching. Jacob DeGrom has been the only guy now that you can rely on. Sadly, Syndergaard has just not been the same pitch. Cologne is what he is, which he eats up innings, but he's inconsistent at 43. I mean, he's doing far better than you can ever expect. We've talked about this already ad nauseum. So put all that together, and there's behind these Yankee Met games. I put it on, but I wasn't like, looking forward to these 4 days, in the weeks ahead.
Well, I think Yankee Mets now, they need to both be good. I think most rivalries, they're exciting when both teams are good. And I mean, you went to Michigan. I'm sure you can speak from your experiences watching Michigan Ohio State games. If it was, if there was always that excitement regardless, and, Michigan and Ohio State are both usually good. But, Michigan had a couple of lean years in there where Ohio State was really good. They weren't. So I don't know if you thought that there was less, excitement for the games or less enthusiasm for the games or anticipation for the game because of the fact that Michigan wasn't as good, or if you thought it was always there regardless of the record of either team. I think, though, with the Yankees and Mets now, I think unless both teams are good, there's going to be very little enthusiasm. I mean, you'll have obviously the fans, in the stands going back and forth, let's go Yankees, let's go Mets, like you do with Islanders Rangers, like you do with Giants Jets every 4 years. The Yankees and Nets don't care.
Are the Mets good now? They traded for Jay Bruce and John Neese. So are they good now?
Oh yeah, they brought back John Neese, the amazing John Neese, who was like, I hate the Mets when he left. Good riddance. I never want to see you again. Oh hey, welcome back, John Neese. We hope there's no hard feelings.
I read that he sublet his apartment to Neil Walker. Walker is in his old place. I'm guessing John Neese wants it back, and then he's back here.
He knocks on the door. Hey, you got a roommate? Yeah. Wow, that's funny. I didn't know that. That's hilarious.
So we talked about, would the Mets trade for starting pitcher? Well, I guess they did. Not one that gets anybody excited. I mean, John Neese is at best the back of the end rotation guy. I mean, I really, I guess, look, it's not like there was quality arms available on the market. Although the Giants did snag Matt Moore, it would have been nice if the Mets could pick up a guy like that.
Yeah, he would have been a good pickup. He would have been a good
pickup for the Mets. Yeah. But
a veteran guy, can give you innings, not a top of the rotation guy, but a solid, 3-4 pitcher. And that's really what the Mets needed. They didn't have to get, a top of the rotation guy. They have Syndergaard, they have DeGrom. Hope that you obviously you're going to hold your breath with both the Syndergaard and Mats every time they go out there.
Yeah, you just don't think Mats is going to last the rest of the year. So, like, who's coming in? So you're going to have Logan Verrett and John Neese as your 4 and 5 guys to make a run into the playoffs?
They're going to be relying very heavily on Syndergaard and DeGrom. I mean, I think it's as simple as that. Yeah, like you said, Mats is a big question mark. Will they pull the plug on him at some point?
And Syndergaard doesn't go more than 6 innings now because they're babying him. So you're relying on a guy that you're babying.
True.
Yep. Okay.
And
well,
Bruce was definitely not. He's a good RBI guy. He's going to strike out a ton. He doesn't. His on-base percentage is pretty low. He'll drive in runs. He can hit the home run, although he's been playing in that bandbox in Cincinnati all these years. So we'll see how inflated, his home run numbers really are. But they didn't need a corner outfielder, a corner left-handed power hitting that strikes out a ton outfielder. I mean, that was not really the guy that they needed. There was nobody else out there, though, that really they felt would make enough of an impact that would be worth trading for. And you even heard Alderson say, yeah, we know he's not a great fit. He's not the perfect fit like Cespedes was last year, but everybody wanted us to do something. We have to follow up our World Series appearance with at least attempting to demonstrate that we're making a run, well, this is what we got for you. So let's roll the dice with this motley crew of players that they'll be shuffling around the outfield and the infield. You'll see a game of musical chairs, it seems like, every night. I think the hell with both the infield and the outfield for the Mets. And you keep your fingers crossed that your pitchers stay healthy, the ones that are left, and you hope that your bullpen can, just not completely blow up games, and that you can get the familiar with a lead. That's the formula now. And that Cespedes is healthy, considering that we have no idea how healthy he is.
Now that we're doing this every week, I feel like we're going to be repeating ourselves every week.
Oh, yeah. We'll be taking their temperature every week. Yeah, so I think it was really more about the Yankees.
There won't be much to say about the Yankees.
No,
the Yankees are just slowly fading out of relevance for the season, and the Mets will desperately hang on only to not make it in the last week or so is the way I project this season to conclude for them. All right.
We'll be taking the Mets temperature every week, and the Yankees will, wave bye-bye to at least a gradual process over the next, month and a half or so. So
let's transition to a new topic here, a topic that may have come up on occasion since the inception of our show, but never in depth. And this is a prime opportunity to give some depth, not only because of it's the middle of summer. We're not close enough to football yet to get too into that. Mets and Yankees aren't too crazy. And there was a big development in this area. In fact, today I planned to talk about it today. And after that plan was, I was doing some outlining for it, this big development happened after. So what am I talking about? Daily Fantasy Sports. So not all of our listeners play Daily Fantasy Sports. I'm guessing most have at least heard of or seen FanDuel or DraftKings ads. They were pretty much unavoidable if you are watching any professional baseball, basketball, hockey, or football event, amongst many other events. Their logos are everywhere. And basically, Daily Fantasy Sports is self-explanatory. You log on to one of these websites, you can deposit real money, and you participate, you structure a team based on a salary cap, and there's salary amounts associated with each player. And you accumulate points, and there's different formats. You could do a tournament style that can have up to thousands, tens of thousands of people in it with, like a very skewed payout for the top X finishers. Or you could do a 50-50 style, which just means the top half of the people double up their entry fee. There's also head-to-head matchups. Bottom line is, it's people using money for fantasy sports, and the games are on a daily basis. So you enter for that day, and it concludes on that day. Unlike traditional fantasy sports, which last the length of the season.
But so, I think, like, those that do play, traditional fantasy sports, I think would definitely be intrigued now that this is supposedly going to be regulated. Like myself, who really never participated in daily fantasy sports, who does participate in other, traditional fantasy sports formats. So I think
supposedly going to be regulated, and that's an interesting way to put it. Because these sites have been around for a few years now, accepting bets. And up until late last year, earlier this year, they were doing it unregulated. They just had sites up with offices in the United States, and they were just taking, they were just accepting bets. If they wouldn't call it bets, accepting entry fees would be the lingo.
It's not gambling now. It's not gambling. They told us that
Daily Fantasy Sports take the position it's not gambling. And why is that? Because
game of skill.
But why? The reason why is because each state in the United States has its own set of gambling laws. And generally speaking, if each state says in their code, all gambling is illegal unless specifically authorized.
Right, because gambling is illegal by federal law, right?
It's gambling is regulated by state law. There's no federal law that says gambling is illegal, per se. No.
There isn't.
It's
okay.
A state law. Gambling is a state law issue. There's nuances to that, but there's no federal statute that just says gambling is illegal.
Okay, I thought there was some kind of federal.
There are some federal laws that address gambling. We could get into that. Maybe that's another topic.
But
by and large, gambling is regulated at the state level. So what these daily fantasy sites were doing is engaging in questionable conduct because there's no court decision that explicitly says daily fantasy sports is not gambling. You can certainly argue that it is. Now, the question you might ask is, well, what is considered gambling? That's a good question. So states have different tests for what is considered gambling. In New York State, gambling is when someone stakes or risks something of value upon the outcome of a contest or chance or future contingent event not under his control or influence upon an agreement or understanding that he will receive something of value in the event of a certain outcome. What are you talking about? Break it down to three elements. One, prize. Can you get a prize? Two, chance. Is it a game of chance? Three, consideration. Are you giving something up potentially for that prize? Those are the three elements for gambling. Okay. The key is the second element. Is it a game of chance? Now, different states have different tests for what is considered a game of chance. Okay. New York State says a contest of chance means any contest gaming scheme or gaming device in which the outcome is upon an element of chance, notwithstanding that skill of the contestants may also be a factor.
So a little convoluted, but also very
convoluted.
Yeah.
Convoluted. So, states have different standards for what is considered a game of chance. There's no definitive answer as to whether daily fantasy sports is considered a game of chance. Is there skill to it? Yes. But is there so much skill that it is not a game of chance because there's so much skill to it?
But then how much skill? Like, well, it's a 70% skill. Oh, well, it's not gambling.
You know what? It wasn't. And so, and here's a pun. The sites took a gamble that it was not gambling by engaging in this activity and taking in, tens, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. Now, not only were they making money, also making money as partners with them throughout this time.
Oh, let me guess. Could it be the professional sports leagues in our country?
You said it, my friend. So the Major League Baseball, the NHL, and the NBA each have agreements in place with either DraftKings or FanDuel to advertise, to share revenue, etc.
And these are the same leagues, I'm sorry to interrupt, but these are the same leagues that have been vehemently against legalized gambling. Any sort of legislation that could potentially lead to
sports betting.
Sports gambling.
Specifically sports betting.
Right, yes. Specifically sports
Correct.
Gambling.
And that's something I also want to address a bit more. But yes, so there's hypocrisy everywhere surrounding this. But the Professional Sports League have made the conscious decision to have a financial incentive in the success of the two biggest states in the United States. Now, the NFL does not have an equity agreement or any specific agreement with those two sites, but over 20 NFL teams do, under the NFL's blessing. So you have all these parties looking to make money from daily fantasy. Now, there's an attorney general in New York who just didn't give a rat's ass and filed a lawsuit. Yeah, Eric Schneiderman filed a lawsuit against FanDuel and DraftKings saying that they are violating New York State penal law. And specifically because this is illegal gambling in New York State, stop your play immediately. Well, there's some back and forth in the courts on whether the sites can continue to operate while this you know, litigation is pending, and we're all wondering, is this setting up a showdown for a court to decide if daily fantasy sports is gambling? In the meantime, state legislatures throughout the United States were considering legalizing daily fantasy sports. Why? So they could tax it and make money. They want a piece of the pie. Why can FanDuel and DraftKings just, you know, accept these bets and make all this money doing business in our states, and you know, we're not taxing it? So, as of today, I believe it's now six states that have, maybe seven, that have passed legislation that authorize daily fantasy sports. Well, most notably, now why are we talking about this today? Not only because we have a nice block of time to allocate to it, but New York State. Governor Cuomo signed the bill today that authorizes daily fantasy sports in New York State. So now New York State has legalized daily fantasy sports. The sites had stopped operating in most notably FanDuel and DraftKings in New York because of this lawsuit that was filed by the Attorney General. But because of this law that was passed today, you can expect these sites to get back up and running in short time. They're going to get what's called a temporary permit, and then they'll officially get a permanent permit through the Gaming Commission of New York State that will oversee this new set of laws. Of course, New York State will collect a 15% tax on it, on the licensed operators. And you have to be at least 18 to play, so it's not like traditional gambling where you have to be 21. Also interesting is that New York State is not allowing contests that involve collegiate sporting events or horse races. There were quite a few players engaging in, or I should say participants on these sites with like college football games. Now, so that's all very exciting for New York, and I think it's going to lay the question is it going to be a domino effect for other states to follow suit? Maybe. I mean, I think a lot of people are closely watching what would happen in New York because that's where the litigation was going on. You know, there were other states like Colorado, Kansas, Missouri, Indiana, Virginia, Tennessee, Missouri, Mississippi. They all as well passed legislation for daily fantasy sports. But you heard that list of states and – you know, the populations there, no offense to those states, but I just, you know, it's not New York. That all being said, there's still questions here.
I mean, I have like a zillion questions. I mean, I'm sure that you're going to, you know, address those questions, but I mean, just like the obvious question, I mean, I guess number one, I don't know if you were going to start there, but how is it different now than it was if I went to FanDuel or DraftKings 6 months ago, you know, to play a daily fantasy football game, let's say, what is other than being taxed and the state getting its money, whoop-de-doo for the state, what is different now that's going to protect me? Consumer protection, right? What's going to protect me now that wasn't there to protect me 6 months ago? That's my first question.
Well, there are consumer protections in the legislation. So whether that prevents, you know, there are some scandals that have
right fraud, or, you know, rigged game, from, whatever, right?
Yeah, like using data. So what are we talking about? So when one thing that players is trying to anticipate how many other people are going to pick certain players. So if there's like a really good value buy, player is projected to do really well, but his price is low, you might anticipate a lot of people to choose that player. So the question is, do you try to fade away from that player in a tournament style so that, you know, because if you have the same players as everyone else in a tournament, chances are it'll be very difficult for you to win the whole thing, right?
Right. Right, and that's the thing, and like, you know, just like the fact that you hear about how like 90 out of like all like the entrants and participants of these games, like 2%, like 1 or 2% are making like 95% of the winnings, right? Or some, it's like some like ridiculously skewed number like that.
I don't know if that's going to change. I don't know. Are you implying
so
that
then it's still like a sucker's bet then? So this is still a way for these companies to take your money, to entice you with their ads. Oh, you know, I played and they didn't. I'm just some ordinary guy that played Daily Fantasy Sports. Now look at me. I won $30,000. Oh, hope that you can do it too. Wow, I can. Well, what am I waiting for?
So, I mean, how, you know,
and what's different then? And how is it the state then is – this is so hypocritical though, and I just the fact that first off that they can't just pass legislation, just make gambling legal then. Just make gambling legal. Say
it's
casinos for everybody, sports gambling, everything legal. You know what? This still. I want to hear more details. I understand I'm ranting without knowing all the details. Fair.
It's a fair point though, and your point about why not just make all gambling legal, is. The answer to that also raises an interesting question about this legislation. But to address your point, so not only is there a U.S. Constitution, right, from our beautiful founding fathers, there are also state constitutions.
Well, no, I think Obama shredded it, right? Isn't that what we've been told by the Republican platform, is that he put it through a shredder or something? I'm sorry.
There was,
He trampled on it with
didn't
his
that guy that spoke
of,
at the Democratic convention whose son died in the line of duty had a pocket constitution at least still.
Oh yeah,
not to make a joke about the situation, but
well, he did offer it to Trump. He said, right. "You know, I don't think you know what this says. Here, I'll let you borrow my copy." I think John Oliver said that's his way of giving middle finger to
back
him.
To gambling is regulated by state law. Now each state has their own constitution. New York State's Constitution says, and you think about it, the Constitution takes authority over statutes, right? The Constitution says all gambling in New York is, or gambling in general is unauthorized unless specifically authorized. Okay?
So they can make everything specifically authorized.
Right, and the Constitution lays out what those specific authorizations are.
Oh, I see.
Okay, which includes the horse racetracks, where they can have video lottery terminals, the lottery itself, the Indian reservations are exempt because they're like on their own land, and that's it. That's all New York has now.
Well,
it changed.
Can we get some white out and just wipe that part out, or like a big black magic marker?
It changed 2 years ago when the constant. So how do you get to daily fantasy? Or how do you make all gambling legal? Well, you have to amend the Constitution itself. And that requires successive legislative approvals. Is it majority vote or two-thirds? I don't remember. But both the House and the Assembly in successive legislatures have to approve the proposed amendment.
And I'm sure that does not happen very often where they're amending the Constitution. So
it did happen. It did happen for gambling 2 years ago, I believe, maybe three.
Oh, is this for the construction of the casinos?
Yes. Yes. Ah. That was authorized by an amendment to the state constitution. Up to 7 full-scale resort casinos in New York.
Gambling's bad. It's illegal. It's immoral. It's terrible. Oh, but you know, we can amend it just so we can have 7 casinos built. But gambling is still bad and illegal. And don't you do it. But come to our casinos. Give us money at our casinos. Oh, and you can bet on fantasy sports now because this game is illegal. It's not gambling.
Well, so here's the thing. If DFS is considered gambling, then it would be struck down. The law would be struck down as unconstitutional.
Because
it wouldn't be authorized under the state constitution.
Right. So that therefore it must be a very skillful game.
Somebody bring a lawsuit, and I think somebody's going to. I think it's going to happen. That challenges the constitutionality of this daily fantasy sports law, and it will get to a question of whether it's gambling under New York law. Because the only real way to feel fully safe that daily fantasy can continue to be regulated in New York is if they amend the Constitution to say that if DFS happens to be considered gambling, it's authorized. But it would take a couple of years to get there, if only, and that's assuming the legislators will approve it as well.
I'm sure. I'm sure that there's some kind of suit that, like you said, I'm sure that there'll be some kind of lawsuit that'll be filed. It'll eventually get to the Court of Appeals. I'm sure they'll strike it down because, again, I'm sure whatever definition that they gave for game of chance, game of skill, and the way that they were able to, allow this legislation to be passed, I mean, is going to be, you know, looked at as just absolutely ridiculous and contradictory, and, you know, just absolutely like offensive to the your common senses. So, I mean, I'm sure that something will materialize here that will eventually have to lead them to amending the Constitution. I mean, would you agree with that?
Well, what they could do is, look, I mean, practically speaking, even if somebody files that lawsuit now, they'll still be able to try to operate pending the litigation.
Oh, of course, right. Oh,
unless the plaintiff who brings a suit can get a restraining order or a permanent injunction against the sites to stop operating while the legislative goes. And the standards, you have to show irreparable harm. Who's being irreparably harmed by letting the sites continue to operate?
The suckers that are betting.
And I don't think that's a sufficient, I don't think that's, specific enough. I'm not an expert on, you know, temporary law, but I know enough to know that I would be surprised if that would happen. So realistically, you'd have to figure the litigation is going to take a few years from the trial level to the, to the appellate division to the Court of Appeals, like you referred. So it's going to take a while to get up there. And heck, that's enough time in the interim to amend the state constitution anyway. So they can pursue that route, if they need to. Now, is it a guarantee the Constitution will be amended? No. Now, you'd think if they pass the law, the DFS law, that the same legislators would approve the Constitution, but it's an election year, so the makeup of the House and the Assembly is going to change.
Yeah.
A lot to digest here, but it's very – look, to the consumer, what's going to be different when you log back on when, if you're in New York and you want to play Daily Fantasy? You know what might be different?
Nothing.
Is the sites? The difference, I think, is the sites' rake will be higher because now they're going to have to pay a 50% tax. So you're going to get less per your winnings because they
higher entry fees or less winnings, and now even less.
Right, and so the cost will be passed down to the consumer.
Any money. So actually, It was maybe even better when it was unregulated. Because, first of all, I don't know what regulations that they're going to put in this quickly that they can start operating again.
And they're going to have to pay more for these internal audits that presume, whatever consumer protection measures are required that were required when they were unregulated, that costs money. And so there you go. There's another cost to pass down to the consumer.
So this is still just a sucker's bet. They're going to start flashing the commercials now during every NFL game. Every other commercial will be Papa John and Peyton Manning, and then back to fantasy, back to FanDuel and DraftKings. And, your ship of money is coming in, and you're going to miss it if you don't join right now.
What do you know? The expectation is that these temporary permits will be issued within a month. Now, what's starting in about a month's time?
Is that what it said? It said they will be issued within the month? Is that what the language
was? That's the expectation.
We got to get it back for the NFL season. Come on, work with us, New York State regulators and legislators. Come on, the NFL season's upon us. The Hall of Fame game is on Sunday.
Pretty incredible.
What a coincidence. Complete coincidence.
Now, I do want to just make, because you brought it up, I was thinking of reserving it for next week, but since we're on topic and it's so related, the sports betting hypocrisy. So how come the sports leagues are not in favor of sports betting like they are for daily fantasy? It's not a simple answer, unless it's a simple answer. And frankly, it is.
Is it a simple answer?
It's money. Oh. It's money. It's money. Now, the means through which they pursue to achieve that end is very, very involved. But that's the bottom line. Why is that? Because states that pass legislation for sports betting, and New Jersey has been leading the charge on that front. There's no partnership to give the professional leagues money in place. Okay. Now, down the line, there probably will be, and that's probably when the leagues are going to back off. But in the meantime, the leagues have aggressively pursued litigation to stop New Jersey from offering sports betting. Now, you might know, you might be aware, Nevada has sports betting, right? So how come New Jersey can't have statute that comes into play? Professional and amateur sports professional act. I actually the
And that's a federal statute.
I'm sorry, Professional Amateur Sports Protection Act. Yes, it's a federal statute known as the Bradley Act.
How appropriate.
Yep. Exactly. That basically outlawed sports betting throughout the nation. There were four states that were three states conducting lotteries, and one state, it was lottery pools of sports lotteries. And one state that was offering sports betting pools at the time, which were grandfathered in. So they were allowed to continue. Lesser known Oregon and Montana. You may not be aware of Delaware, who still has parlay bets. And of course, Nevada, the king state of sports betting in the United States. So they're
it's the single games that they're opposed to, right? Just betting on as opposed to doing, you know, the parlays or, you know, like that, you know, like your teasers.
No, I think they're opposed to. I think they're opposed to all of it.
I thought they were more opposed to just like betting on a single game. That was something that they were completely against. I mean, I guess if it's sports betting and sports betting,
So New Jersey passed the law. They actually have passed different laws. One just saying we want to have state. We think the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act is unconstitutional because it commandeers the states. That's the constitutional provision. It commandeers the states in a particular way.
Oh, big government, states' rights.
They lost on that point. And so what they did was they passed another law that deregulated sports betting in the state of New Jersey and basically said private operators can offer sports betting. That's a law that they passed. But it's limited to the casinos and racetracks, I believe, was the exact nature of the law. So they basically deregulated sports betting.
Yeah, you can't even keep up with all this. It's just you can't.
This is just a back and forth game between the leagues and New Jersey, because the federal statute basically says that states can't legalize and regulate sports betting.
Right, and that federal statute, Donald Trump's all state statutes.
That's the federal statute, is that the states can't regulate and legalize and regulate. So the New Jersey is saying, we're deregulating it. The private operators, the racetracks and the casinos, yeah, they can do it, but we're deregulating it. We're not going to regulate it.
Well, can they all just do that then? If they just say, all right, fine, we can't regulate it, we'll deregulate. Everybody can do what they want.
So what did the sports leagues do? They filed another lawsuit.
Did it open up Pandora's box here, potential Pandora's box? Is that what it
– No, and so that legal question is still in the courts. I think this started in 14, maybe 15, early 15. I don't know. The New Jersey lost at the trial level. They appealed. They lost at the Third Circuit of Appeals. This is in the federal courts. But then they applied for what's called an en banc hearing at the circuit court. So at the circuit court,
I've always
court,
wanted to attend one of those. The en banc hearing.
So there's Ted Olson represented New Jersey, who's like, one of the most famous trial lawyers in the United States. Paul Clement is on the former prosecutor, a federal prosecutor who now is in private practice and is who represents the leagues. So it's like these two, you know, heavy hitting trial attorneys with long standing track records going at it here, slugging it out. I mean, this is no joke. So at the circuit level, there were three judges that heard the case initially. They upheld the lower court decision, and then the New Jersey appealed again for an en banc hearing, which we want all the judges on the circuit to hear this case and decide. And the request was granted to hear and have an en banc hearing. And so currently we're waiting for the entire circuit, Third Circuit of Appeals, to render its decision on this case.
So we're back to the en banc hearing. I got lost in there. So, they filed a motion to not have the en banc hearing, but then they filed a summary.
Is
A-Rod's lawyer involved in this? You know, the same guy that said, oh, we're going to sue Major League Baseball for daring to slander our clients, besmirch our clients' good name by saying he did steroids and or took away his...
I don't think those firms are involved in this litigation. I think sports betting is going to have its day. Look, so what? Well, you repeal the federal statute, right? I mean, that's an option, but good luck getting Congress to do anything is what, you know, is the reaction that you hear, and that's fair. I mean, getting Congress to focus their time on that when there's a million other issues that are more important is valid. So it's a different history, you know, as far as thinking about the path to legalization for sports betting, but the same players. So it's just interesting to follow both of those issues as they continue to go. But I think 10 years from now, it'll be everywhere. I think that's a pretty safe. It'll be everywhere in the U.S. I think it's a pretty safe bet, speaking of.
All right, so what our listeners can take out of this is, hey, DraftKings and FanDuel is back. Start getting your entries in now. Big money to be won. Hurry, hurry, hurry. I guess just in time for the NFL season.
Indeed. Hey, now, look, that's not true for every state, but if you're in New York.
Well, at least if you're in New York, right, if you're in New York.
And on the flip side, there are other states where DraftKings and FanDuel are still operating despite no law being passed, because attorney generals have explicitly come out and said, think it's gambling for you. I can play in New Jersey. I could, even though there's no statute that explicitly authorizes it in New Jersey. Just trying to navigate the legal landscape for daily fantasy is a head scratcher. You know, so I could play in New Jersey because the attorney general says it's not gambling, so we're not going to go after the sites, but I'm going to be the law that specifically allows it. Lovely. That's the world we live in.
My head is spinning right now. So,
Alan, and I'm sure I lost most other listeners to this point. So let's just change the subject to something a lot lighter. Something that has been one of my best pastimes actually ever. Probably like on easily on my top five list. Starting lineups.
Right below your hipster beer of the week.
Right below hipster beer of the week. Chasing starting lineup figures. So for those not in the know, starting lineup figures came out in 1998. They were sports figurines basically, and I think the last year of production was 2001 or two, and so. It's like 94, 95 was when I started really getting into it. And they were collector's items. And this was before the days of eBay and, you know, well, really it was AOL first and, you know, then it evolved into eBay where you could just, you know, get them online. But back then you were chasing for these figurines in stores and they were not in plentiful supply, and they would specifically limit production of certain pieces to make them harder to get. So and it's kind of like baseball cards in a way. And your brothers, and thanks to my dad as the method of transportation, we would go from Toys R Us to KB to Kitty City, you know, Kmart, etc., trying to track down these figures. And it was a lot of fun. And we ended up all shows, like these card shows, and selling them. It was a hobby. We weren't really making money from it. We were breaking even, but it was more the thrill of getting the pieces and, you know, running into Toys R Us, checking to see if they had any, and they had this really hard piece to find. Kind of like beer now and chasing after beer. Anyway.
It's the thrill of the chase. It's the thrill of the chase.
Right. So why am I saying that? Because starting lineups are back. Starting lineups are back. Well, actually, they're behind me. So they're back. If you look,
they never went
enough,
anywhere. They've been.
If you look
time.
Closely enough on the YouTube channel, that
hello, Jose Canseco's starting lineup figurine.
There are. Look, you can see, and I've had them there ever since the show started. Whether or not you noticed, and it wasn't because I'm bringing it up now, because it's coincidence. Actually, I collect. I still have some. But starting lineup. So here's the news. This was from over the weekend. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers announced that they will have a giveaway starting lineup figurine of quarterback Jameis Winston to anyone who buys a ticket to their game against the Oakland Raiders.
Jameis Winston, how come not Austin Seferian Jenkins? I want my own Austin Seferian Jenkins starting lineup figurine. What gives? Jameis Winston.
So, I mean, this is just... Look, this brand is back for a day. Apparently, a promotions company that is a consultant to the Buccaneers reached out to the person that purchased the rights to the brand and struck to allow this production to happen for one game. Now, look, it's not the same that it was. You know, with eBay, moments after the game, you're going to be able to buy it online. There's going to be 50,000 of them available. So say that the store chasing is coming back. But
well, unless there's a bad call, and then everybody will be throwing their figurines onto the field, the referees. And here come the starting lineup figurines of Jameis Winston.
Oh, man, it would be great if the Jets did one and Geno happens to be the quarterback and all these starting lineups get thrown on the field and it's an interception.
Hall of Famer Joe Willen Namath trying to plead with the crowd for some kind of sanity.
They have a starting lineup of Joe Namath, actually.
Like I don't doubt it.
They had a collector's piece. I actually have a Boomer Esiason Jets starting lineup. I'm looking at it right now.
Boomer
Sean Johnson
one.
Jets starting lineup.
Is Joe Willie wearing the fur coat on the starting lineup figurine? A little plastic fur coat on top of his jersey.
I have a signed, speaking of interesting wardrobes, I actually have a signed Walt Clyde Frazier starting lineup. That he signed
that?
In person.
Is he wearing a hipster
suit?
We
brought it to a Knicks game. How catch him? Because, you know, he and this was back in the mid-90s. You know, he's been doing it a long time now. And sure enough, I think I was too scared to do it, but my brother, who has a lot bigger balls than I do, went up to him and he just signed the piece.
Literally and figuratively?
Probably. Not only sure about the literally part, not sure about the figuratively.
All right.
A throwback piece of news. There is a private starting lineup group on Facebook where some of the real hardcore, former hardcore, and still some of them current hardcore collectors are still active, and they still try to scope out like prototype pieces and pieces that were produced insanely limited, but you know, it's just one of those, you know, collector's things. But with eBay, it's so different now, so I don't want to get too excited about it, but it's just a nice little pastime to mention. Starting line of figures.
All right.
Very cool.
All right.
I'm ready for the beer of the week. How about you?
Hipster beer of the week. Let's do it.
So, as I alluded to at the beginning of the show, this was a beer that I'm not precisely sure how it's pronounced. Lilikoi Kapolo. That's the best I can do. L-I-L-I-K-O apostrophe, first word. Second word, K-E-P-O-L-O.
Interesting.
What the heck? So it's, I haven't seen
it. Do they have a Lilio Kaleppo light and a Lilio I Kaleppo dry? That's my question.
Not yet. Not yet. So this beer, I think, is its style results in it getting being a misnomer in bars. So I was actually at a bar last night, and they had this bar on draft. Wasn't the first time I had it.
Ooh.
But they had it on tap, and first time I had it on tap. But it was labeled as a fruit beer. So This beer is described by the brewing company, Avery Brewing Company, Colorado, as a Belgian wit brewed with passion fruit. It is a wit beer. That is the style. Okay.
A wit beer. Fruit beer. A witty beer.
Yeah. Fruit beer to
How
me
droll,
is
that beer.
A sweet. When you see fruit beer, well, at least when I see fruit beer, I think of something sweet. A sweetie fruit taste.
As do I.
This is not.
As do most.
This is not
a
sweet
listeners.
Beer. Tart. The passion fruit gives it a tart wheat taste, which I absolutely love. And I think it's just, it's not, so people aren't ordering it. People that, well, it could work the other way. There's people that order fruit beer because they want the sweet beer. And then when they get this, it's anything but, so they're disappointed. And then the people that would want the tart beer, they'd have to read the fine print under the description to know that it's not just fruit beer, they pass right over it. Like the person that I was at the bar with did not really, if it was under, I guess if they had wit beer as a label, it might stand a better chance. But if the, you know, the marketing folks at Avery are listening, maybe this is the way you want it to be. Fair enough. But I think this beer can get a lot more traction if it's somehow cast in a different way from the bars themselves. It's a pretty distinct dark bluish can. Or you catch it on tap. I've had it in the can. I've had it on tap. Both phenomenal. You got to like tarty type of beer.
Is it also luscious, though? Not just the tartness. Is it luscious in its tartness?
Absolutely.
Well, then
I wouldn't be recommending it if it were otherwise.
All right. Well, then I'm sold. I was a little skeptical initially, but hey, where can I find one? You tell me where I can get it, and I'm there.
Go to beermenus.com. Put in, look up the beer. Put in your zip code, and it will tell you where it's close to you. This beer is, of the ones that we've mentioned so far, this is one where if you go to a restaurant that has a decent, or a bar with a decent beer selection, they might have it. This is not one that you really have to, like, drive 20, 30 miles.
Like the monkey beer or the monk beer.
Monkey chase the weasel. That one you can get in still really only in growlers in New Jersey or at bars in New Jersey. Or that proletariat in the Lower East Side / East Village where you and I went. The hipster, you'd call it the hipster, the craft beer bar. They had it. They got it like 4 days after we were there.
So yeah, but you know what now? But if you're telling me I can go to Jersey, get a growler, and then I can make a deregulated bet on a NFL game, you know what? I think I'm going to go to Jersey and get myself a good growler and place a bet.
Jersey's just trying to name for itself, and I think they've identified how.
They're giving me more growlers reasons. Why the hell would anybody ever go to Jersey? Well, we have multiple reasons now because they have the monkey beer and because they have deregulated sports gambling.
I wonder, though, actually, if you know what? You unintentionally raised an interesting point. Will the rake in New Jersey be less than the rake in New York? Will they specifically take less money from the people playing in New Jersey and New York? Or will the sites have enough data to blend the rake to amongst all the states that it's operating in and make it even so that you don't have an incentive to go to one state over the other. So they'll like build in the extra tax they have to pay to New York and just pass that cost on to all consumers throughout all the states they play in. You follow what I'm saying? Instead of having
It really was, like you said, completely unintentional.
but no, I
get what you're saying. It's a good point.
I think they should pass it. Like the states, the players in the unregulated states won't be happy, but I think they should just pass players across the board, because otherwise people are going to have an incentive. Like if they're on the New York, New Jersey border, if the rake is higher in New York and people are getting less of a payout, they're going to go to New Jersey and play.
Why not? Right.
Yeah. And you know, people do that for online poker cause it's legal in New Jersey. So I know people that live in New York who take a PATH train to New Jersey and play online poker in New Jersey cause it's legal. It's different there because online poker is and that's a whole other subject. But people are willing to cross borders. The question is if the rake difference is pretty marginal, maybe they won't. But I don't know. I don't know how that's gonna play out.
Well, now I think that's enough incentive. I have extra incentive now to try and like manipulate my IP address to make it seem like I'm in New Jersey when I'm actually in New York. So to play online poker and to make deregulated sports bets.
So next week, I think it's time to, you know, the Mets and Yankees are what they are. We can only say so much. Next week, I think it's time to really begin the transition towards looking at the 16-17 NFL season.
The footballs is back.
So we talked
and we
about
will
the Jets
have
last
had
week.
One preseason yes. game played by the time our next.
I think we have to make a promise to our listeners: the New York Giants will be covered next episode.
All right.
Without thinking it through, I don't care. I just did. We haven't really talked about the Giants at all yet. And we did already cover the Jets, especially last week because of Fitzpatrick. So we are going to get to your New York Giants, after what they did in the offseason otherwise, and what we're looking forward to as they try to turn their fortunes. And we'll see what happens there. So until next time.
All right.
Bye. He said tonight, he said night. Night.
Oh, yeah, baby hipster?
Night. Yep. Big old baby hipster. Baby hipster said night. All right.
How adorable. She got audio of it in a play for everybody. And we'll have that as like our signing off. Yes, all right.
We need to hire a sound engineer intern to help us with that as I've hit some roadblocks on what seemingly seemed simple tasks to incorporate sound from my system as well as my mic into the show, and we've had some technical difficulties 25 episodes in. So there's a but by the way, hip in the lip, you can, if you've made it this far, you must be willing to follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. We're at Hip in the Lip on Twitter. Spread the word, folks. We're here.
And we're not going anywhere. We are here to stay.
And I'm a hipster, so what else more do you need? You need the lip, too. Talking
and,
about
with some lips sprinkled in as well.
Talking about the pre-Buck Showalter Yankees. I like it. All right.
Hey, I can name, you know how many players I can name from those teams? I mean, I can even name Sam Militello. Who else remembers Sam Militello in 1993?
Do you think they made a starting lineup figure of Sam Militello?
I hope they did. If it's out there, I'm going to try and procure it for myself. And I will give it to
Baby.
Back give it to Baby Hipster for Christmas.
The late 80s, early 90s, they made a lot of figures. The volume of figures per sport decrease significantly after that.
Well, Hensley Mullins would suffice if I can't find Sam Militello. Or maybe Mel Hall.
They might have made those guys. You'd be surprised.
All right, next.
All right, folks. Yep. Good listening, and we'll see you next week.
We will see you next week. Bye.